stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where does he want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone!
The Formula One season is over, and the two biggest takeaways, finger wags and logos, of course. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 114 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbour, that's Mr. Andre Harrison. And we can rejoice, gentlemen. The Formula One season is over.
It's over.
Yes.
Is this what it's like when Germany surrendered?
I guess that's what it felt like, given, you know, spark plugs and whatnot. But it's like I've never had such a greater feeling of relief. I can stop shitposting now. It's fantastic.
That's my gimmick.
No shit. To be fair, if you see my tweets during Formula One this season,
and if you've like, seen my tweets during Formula One season, especially as it's wound down.
Good point. Good point. You win this round, but. Yeah, I guess we better get the introductions out of the way. Hello, Mr. RJ O'Connell.
Howdy, everybody. It's the winter. Racing season is over, mostly. And then you remember that the Hong Kong E-Prix is next week. Your summer-ish racing season is over. you can now catch up on naps. And not wake up at 7 in the morning to watch Formula One.
We can go outside and stuff. You know,
Going outside.
Dear, you can go outside. We can do things. You can interact with other humans, not via the internet. You know,
or you can bring your Nintendo Switch outside, play some Super Mario Odyssey, and match up in some Splatoon 2 with your buddies.
I need to get around to that.
Yeah,
I'm off to. I'm gonna have to treat myself for Christmas. I might have like all three current gen consoles by the end of the year. That's gluttony right there at this point. But also in the corner, fresh off another ridiculous Pittsburgh upset victory, it's Mr. Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Shock the world.
What is it with Pittsburgh and this just like knack of ridiculous upset victories?
No, don't worry about it, guys. I have full faith that somehow, some way, the U, like Clemson, will win the national championship despite having one loss in their season, which happens to be against the University of Pittsburgh.
The road to the college football national championship that is laced with loads of Dr. Pepper cups and hastily burned Tennessee merchandise in the wake of some aborted coaching hires. Yeah, it runs through Pittsburgh.
It runs through losing to a below 500 Pitt team.
As you do. Because, of course, that's how we do things around here. Speaking of upsets, can England cricket team get their shit together, please? After losing,
that ain't happening. That ain't happening.
No, it's probably not. No. Like, I believe in comebacks, but not miracles. But, that's how we do things around here, I suppose. Right, let's get the pleasantries out of the way. Places you can find this. Motorsport101.net. Stay tuned on there very soon. Dre's annual team review series is going to be coming up later this week. My favourite part of the year, quite frankly, because I can pour scorn on your favourite F1 team and then get told in the comments that I'm a Sebastian Vettel lover. That never happens. Never. Not in a million years. Other places you can find us are on youtube.com/motorsport101. More content coming up there soon. I've got to order myself a new Elgato because I have some games to play. Fun times. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/motorsport101. We are on Twitter. It's Twitter at motorsport_101. And for us personally on Twitter, we are at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, and at Ryan Eric King. Fun times. And if you really, really like us, you can back us on Patreon at patreon.com/motorsport101. Hey, we put up last week's shows for a dollar because it was Thanksgiving and I was feeling generous. Aren't you lucky? But normally, $5 early access will get you at least a day early episodes of Motorsport 101 and Bike Live, which of course will be back later this week with our MotoGP season review. I can't wait for this. Me and Sutterby, 2 hours and probably the greatest MotoGP season ever. Can't wait for that. If you haven't already, listen to last week's episode, The Best of British, as well, talking about the best of the British and World Superbike seasons. Some fun times. And I promise we talked about Jonathan Rea for less than 20 minutes. Honest. Seriously.
Sportsman of the Year candidate, Jonathan Rea.
Yes, more on that in just a second. But first, some funny music before keeping it 101. Alrighty then, keeping it going on for this week. And yes, RJ kind of introed into that quite nicely, funnily enough. But yeah, I love this sort of thing. The BBC literally in about in the last 2 hours have published their final 12 nominees for the BBC Sports Personality of the Year. And my dreams were met. I've been pulling for this for some time, and I am delighted to say that Jonathan Rea is one of the final 12. That is awesome. We have, like, for those guys that don't know, that is the first biker to be nominated in the final shortlist since James Toseland back in 2007. So a decade without a biker in the final 10, or in this case, final 12. But very, very cool to see indeed. So for motorsports.
What's the over under on Jonathan Rea starting a band soon?
Ooh, I would say like 12 months, and I would say take the under on that, like, because like James Tozen is a handsome devil who can play the piano. It's very useful to have on the side when he's not busy being the best thing about BT Sports MotoGP coverage. But for those guys that don't know, the full list of 12 I will give you now. We have Elise Christie representing short track speed skating, Sir Mo Farah from athletics and track and field, Chris Froome from cycling, Lewis Hamilton makes another appearance in the final 12, Anthony Joshua, who is the landslide favourite with the bookies, by the way, Harry Kane for representing Tottenham Football Club, of course, Joe Konter from tennis, Johnny Peacock from the world of Paralympic athletics, Adam Peaty, the world's most ridiculous breaststroke swimmer. Like, seriously, it's ridiculous. Jonathan Rea, of course, representing World Superbikes. Anya Shrubsall from the women's cricket team. And Bianca Walkden from Taekwondo. As the guy who did TKD for 7 years, I'm fucking awesome to have Bianca in there as well. So that's the final 12. We'll find out who wins on Sunday, December the 17th. And, King, we're going all in for Johnny Rea here, right?
No, man. Anthony Joshua.
What do you mean I don't know?
I don't know. Anthony Joshua. Like, I like favorites.
You like, yeah.
Like, if I had to, like, rank, like, the top three of who I, like, legitimately think is going to win this, it's going to be Anthony Joshua, Harry Kane, and then honorable mention, Joanna Conta.
Yeah, I know a good friend of the show, Len, tweeted me saying that Joe Conta's a great outside bet, and I was like, yeah, that is a great outside bet, because we Brits, like for me personally, from an opinion standpoint, I think it's no contest. Chris Froome should win this.
Yeah.
But but I've mentioned this before, and I will mention this again. We don't really give a shit about cycling in this country. We just pretend to.
But low key, British people love tennis way more than they think they do.
Yes. Yeah, like, if there's one sport we overinflate, it's definitely tennis. So, yeah, like, I totally see where you're coming from on that one.
And the irony is that you can't inflate a tennis ball, but you can inflate a tire on a bicycle.
Hey, let's see what you did there. Very clever. For those guys that are interested in, you know, Dre the Bookies guy here, Andy Joshua, 1-5 favourite. So, yeah, the bookies are even more balls deep on the AJ bandwagon here. Lewis Hamilton, 6-1, second favourite. Chris Froome, 12s. You can get Mo Farah at 25-1, which is a bit of a surprise. I was like, Mo Farah that far out? Okay.
Yeah, probably a bit too dodgy. That. I can definitely see that.
He's a bit dodgy, King, to say the least. I think you know, the days of Farah winning this are long gone. Jonathan Rea, 33-1. Like, he's in the upper half. I was like, okay, I'm here for this. All aboard the Johnny Way bandwagon. Let's do this. Johnny Peacock, 40-1. Harry Kane, Johnny Peacock, 40-1. Harry Kane, 50-1. Adam Peaty, 66-1. Anya Shrubsall, 66-1. Bianca Walden, 100. As is Elise Christie. And Joe Contos, 100-1. What?
That seems ridiculously low.
Like, why? Like, we love tennis here. Like, that is a
shock. I think it's because she didn't win.
We go in full Tim Henman, King. Like, was like, she made the semis. That'll do. We'll get behind her. She made the semis. We're going full Tim Henman here because Andy Murray was hurt. Like, damn it.
I'm sorry. 2 years ago, she was 150th in the world. Now she's fourth. Like, people.
Oh, she's a superstar. Like, yeah. Really, Joe Cotton is amazing. Like again, like I said, like as an each way shout. If any bookies are offering each way on this, take Joe Cotton at 100-1 for God's sake. Don't be an idiot about this. But yeah, like, I completely agree with the masses. I think it's nailed on for Anthony Joshua. I think, because the thing is, of us Brits, King, we love a good British boxer, especially if he's a heavyweight. And Anthony Joshua ticks every box. It's like, he's handsome. He knocked out Vladimir Klitschko. You know, he's super popular. Everybody loves him. You know, it's like, he's that humble background athlete dude. Like, and again, he's a boxer, and we love a good boxer. So, yeah,
which is strange, because in America, it's like, boxing? Question mark?
Yes.
It's like, is that the thing that Conor McGregor did once?
Very true. I'm surprised Lewis is a shorter 6-1 as well. But, like, there's no way Lewis is winning it this year after the Paradise Papers came out. Like, I saw Lewis Hamilton get on the nomination list.
Yeah, I think pretty much, like, they had to nominate him after the Paradise Papers. Like, now it's like, he's not going to win. If the Paradise Papers, like, did not come out, he would have won. He would have won.
Yeah, like, I saw tweets like the announcement that he was part of the shortlist, and the first response on Twitter was, and I quote, and pardon my French here, tax dodging asshole. This is not going to happen, people, because we Brits are really snooty about people not paying their tax. Just saying. Like, he got enough shit for this 2 years ago when he went up against Rory McIlroy. Like, there's no way Lewis Hamilton is winning this year. For me, all aboard the Jonathan Rea wagon, yo. Let's go. Let's go, Johnny Ray. Please win the damn thing. Also, shout out, as mentioned, to the overseas sports personality of the year. I'm a bit gutted that our boy Mark Marquez didn't make it in. I'm a bit gutted about that.
Wow.
No, he didn't. The final six this year, right, for overseas sports personality of the year. Tom Brady, right? Yeah, I was like, Brady, really? Okay. Like, Brady, Roger Federer, who will probably win it, because everyone in Great Britain loves Roger. Katie Ledecky, I was like, oh, okay, Katie Ledecky got in, that's cool. Tatiana McFadden from the Paralympic side of sport, cool to see. Sally Pearson on the comeback trail. And RJ, your man's large adult son, Michael Van Gerwen.
Oh my god!
A darts man made it in!
The least athlete of all athletes made onto Athlete of the Year.
Okay, yep. I think the entire podcast is on board. He needs to win.
Yes, Michael Van Gerwen for overseas.
He does not need any help winning. He can win this with blindfolded. He can win this blindfolded.
Yes.
If it's like his profession. Also, we did just get the news that World Darts Championship is going to be on BBC America in the States.
Yep.
Oh! King, we can shitpost together with all this now.
Yes, I have access to the World Darts Championship.
It's gonna be so much fun.
Oh my, are you ready? Are you ready for large dads in moisture wicking polo shirts and ill fitting khaki pants? Ready to strut out on stage like they're swooping in from the damn rafters like Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 12.
Hashtag two Americas. Repeat, this is a two Americas situation right here.
Dare I say, I think the world is ready. Dre and Friends watch. The world
yes!
championship.
Yes! Yes!
Because what else are we going to fill our off-season content with? Week-by-week analysis of the Hong Kong Prix. That would be silly.
Oh, Jesus. I am here for all of this, RJ. And, like, we just had the first round draw come out as well, like, in the last couple of hours.
So somebody in this fourth quarter is going to be the Shawn Michaels to Phil Taylor's Ric Flair, and I am here for this.
Yes.
Admittedly, I'm probably going to be like Chance the Rapper, because I know the rules and I know the big names and nothing else.
That's all you need to know, King.
You just fall in love with the quirkiest dude from the first round of the playoffs and appreciate him while they're there before they get inevitably railroaded by the overwhelming odds-on favorite.
That's what we do around here.
Yeah, because if it was like last year's, it's not like March Madness. You are not going to see a lot of upsets.
No. But there are some fun names. Lots of fun names. Like RJ, I reckon King would be like a massive Mensa Sulevich fan. Like, the headbutt after every major checkout is legendary.
No. I'm all about the slow build-up, and then he just twirls the dart around for like 20 seconds and then chucks it.
It's great. There's some fun first round matchups in there, like Michael Van Gerwen against Christian Kiss. That's not going to be a walkover first round. Now, Dave Chisnall versus Vincent Van der Voort in the opening round. That could be interesting.
All the up tempo throwing.
Yeah, there's some fun ones in there. Benito Van der Pass against Steve West in the opening round. Gary Anderson could get Jeff Smith in the opening round. The Canadian Silencer, that could be fun as well. There is some great first round matchups in there, but World Darts Championship starts December 14th on Sky Sports, sponsored by William Hill, of course. Had to get that one in. The final being on New Year's Day. We have to watch this at some point. This is going to be just like pure shit posting content to fill up the off season, and I'm here for all of it, quite frankly.
Y'all, do we have enough time for me to talk about Nismo Festival this weekend?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh my god. I've watched pretty much the entirety of the Nismo Festival from Fuji Speedway. So think of it as like a big celebration of Nissan's motorsports activities. It was a good time. So it starts off with a parade of 160 production cars. You got your GTRs and your Fairlady Z's at the front, and then you've got like Nissan Micras, Nissan Jukes, Nissan Leafs at the back of it. Then we had the Circuit Safari. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the Circuit Safari concept, I will explain it to you this way. You get on a bus, the bus goes around the track. And while the bus is going around the track, a bunch of race cars are going on around the track at speed. It's the coolest thing ever. It started in Japan. It slowly made its way overseas because they also brought this to a British GT round earlier this year.
Yes, that sounds really cool.
F1 needs Circuit Safari. We need an extra free practice devoted just for a Circuit Safari.
Oh my goodness. The most fun event probably was the historic car exhibition race. Now, this was like an event for early 1970s rear-wheel drive touring cars, mostly Nissan Sunnies. One of the chaps who showed up was actually a covert Nissan legend in Masahiko Kageyama. He brought a Leighton House colored Nissan Sunday to the dance, and it was a fun time. There was a lot of passing, a lot of attrition. Like, that race was more fun than it had any right to be.
Right, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Then we had the Nismo Grand Prix. For more contemporary cars, you had all the Nissan GTRs from Super GT against all the cars from Super Taikyu, which is a... It's kind of like a Japanese take on a VLN or a 24-hour series. And they even brought one of the Nissan GTRs over from Blancpain GT. They have a 12-lap race. They have some different pit stop rules to kind of balance out the field. In the end, the Nismo team, of course, wins the big race. Because Tsuchiya Matsuda and Ryne Kinnarelli are probably the best driver combination that we've ever seen in Super GT history. And then there was a brief intermission before the main event of the day, the GTR Heritage Run. This was 16 different Skyline GTRs and GTRs, each of them in race, all of them with their original drivers. So not only did you have like the contemporary GT500 GTRs, you also had Michael Krum driving his old V8-powered GTR Nismo GT1 from the old FIA GT1 championship. You had Katsumasa Chiyo in his car that he won the Bathurst 12-hour with. You had both the 98 and 99 Pennzoil Nismo Skyline GTRs with Masami Kageyama and Eric Comas in them. You had the two Skyline GTR LMs that raced at Le Mans, which were particularly fan favorites. You had three R32 Skyline GTR touring cars. One of them was the Calzada car, of course. The other was the HKS Racing GTR, which had green headlights that were amazing. And Drift King Keiichi Tsuchiya in a black and red STP Taisan GTR. That dude is a fan favorite no matter where he shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally you go back to like the 1970s. So like the original Nissan Skyline GTRs that were so dominant in touring car racing. And then there was one car that really took my eye. It's the 1973 Skyline GTR Racing Concept. Now, this second generation model, it launched in 1973, and they only made 197 of them before production ceased. Basically, the energy crisis hit everyone, and especially hit Japan hard, and Nissan had to pull the plug on the car early. This is the only known car that was ever prepared for racing. It didn't actually race, but they built it as a concept, showed it off at the Tokyo Auto Show, and it's beautiful. It almost looks like there's definitely a lot of American, like, muscle car influence on the design of this car, as I posted in the Discord chat. Like, it's just beautiful. This event was a fun time. You can watch the whole thing in its entirety on Nismo TV. You might even hear from me in some degree from it, as I kept feeding information to Sam Collins while he was commentating the action, as you do.
You shameless fanboy.
Look, I'm just here to add context and information to the story to help other people enjoy the Nismo Festival a lot better.
Yes, sir. That is definitely a good thing.
Yep, and we'll talk about this. This isn't the only manufacturer festival. Note, because Honda has one, and it's very relevant to stuff we're going to talk about here later.
Yes, sir. Indeed. King, you wanted to mention a bit of college football again.
Yes, because my alma mater, the University of Pittsburgh, decided to stop being a trash bag team for its one and only time this year.
It's one yearly win, not a shithouse performance.
yes, because going into this game, the University of Pittsburgh was 4-7 on the season, which, you know, is not good. We knew, like, you need to be at least 6-6 to be eligible for a bowl game. We knew that postseason football was not going to exist for the Panthers, and we are rolling up into Pittsburgh. This Sunday was the, I believe, number 2 in the nation, unbeaten up to this point, University of Miami.
The AKA, U is back!
AKA the U. Everyone thought the U was back.
Yo, they got youth pastor Mark Richt. They got the turnover chain. They've also won a bunch of coin flip games to this point, so they could have easily gone 500 just as well. But, you know, things were looking great, and then they ran to Pittsburgh, and oh, good golly, Miami, what are you doing?
Yes, for the second, like, this was Miami's last game of the season. Like, it's about an every other year tradition where basically our the garbage match for Pitt and Miami is always the last game of the season.
I love that we have a college football segment on Keeping It 101, and we're not even going to talk about the fact that Auburn University knocked off Alabama in a decisive match.
That's not important. That's not important.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Yes, number two in the nation, University of Miami, rolls into Pittsburgh and loses 14-24. I was at work, so I missed most of the game. I saw the highlights. Mainly, I actually got to see the last quarter because I didn't think this was gonna happen. The game pretty much ended on a fumble recovery, which should have been a sack. I mean, I don't know what Miami's quarterback was thinking, but it's like, yeah, I'm gonna try to throw it. But it wasn't a forward pass. He fumbles the ball. Pitt picks it up with a minute to go. Game over.
Whoopsie.
And this is the second year in a row the University of Pittsburgh has derailed an undefeated team.
Yes, while, because if you'll remember, they did this with Clemson University, who went on to win the national championship that year. Coining the expression, put Pitt in.
Put Pitt in. Yes, because
it's also the line King loses on Tinder.
Yes, because based on the transitive property, the University of Pittsburgh is the best team in the nation. And I think this is the fourth time in recent history Pitt has defeated. Pitt is undefeated against top three teams in the nation.
Of course.
Despite the last few years, we have yet to the last few years we have not played a bowl game.
It's lit. Congratulations, King. Your alma mater stepped up to the plate. It was a beautiful thing.
Yep. Hashtag it's lit. Hashtag it's Pitt.
That's outstanding. That is. That is outstanding shithousery. Right. One more thing before we go. Guys, we got another case of Fight Night.
Oh, Fight Night is back!
We have two in 3 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. We go back to the NFL on this occasion, and in a complete barn burner, and by that I mean it was a terrible game of football, between the Denver Broncos and the Oakland Raiders.
Stay classy, AFC West.
Stay classy, AFC West. Aqib Talib, who's had a bit of a reputation over the years of being, shall we say, aggressive when it comes to dealing with his fellow player, and Michael Crabtree, who is pretty much who is still famous for the meme of being thrown under a bus by Richard Sherman in the NFC Championship game a few years ago. Yes, that rant that went viral a few years back. Yes. I saw a receiver like Crabtree, etc. Anyway, we have to put in a little bit of backstory here because this happened last year too. Last year, I think it was week 17 of the regular season where Denver played Oakland. And in that, Aqib Talib didn't like the jibber jabber that Michael Crabtree was giving him during a play. So what does Aqib Talib do? The ultimate play of disrespect. He snatched the man's chain.
Yeah, he legit stole it. He legit stole it on the field of play.
Aqib Talib's response was, Crabtree isn't good enough to earn the right to wear his chain on a football field. So Aqib Talib snatched his chain. Which, Michael, at this point, I'm surprised he didn't just throw hands and kill the man afterwards. You can't snatch the man's chain.
Oh,
you can't...
Dude. Oh, was that a television camera person that got knocked over in the collateral?
Yes.
Yeah, and an official. There was an official on the ground.
Yeah, he chucks the flag up in the air.
I'm hurt. I'm on the ground. Gotta get this flag off. It is a beautiful thing. So what happened this time, right? On Sunday, it happened again. The Crabtree clearly was gunning for revenge after last year. So at the end of a play, the play's been whistled dead. Crabtree basically puts his hands on Talib for a bit of afters. A very, very long shove off the field. They end up on the ground, and that's when they start swinging. Oh dear.
The second part of this, it's coming here. You can see, like, Talib in the white jersey. He's just gonna throw an almighty crossover here.
Yeah.
Look, it just walks up to him, bam, stretch that left arm out.
And you know what? He's actually smart, because he throws Crabtree's helmet off, too. See, Aqib Talib is a stay-ready all-star. Like, he knows exactly what it comes down to when it comes to a fight. If you're going to throw hands, take the man's helmet off. And then afterwards, Talib has no problem swinging. Like, Crabtree, he's not ready for this. He has no problem punching towards Talib's helmet. And that is the golden rule of these fights. You do not punch a man in the helmet. They're designed to protect a lot sturdier things than your fist, quite frankly. But I also, if there's one other bonus from this, I have to also say it was, like, hilarious to see, like, the guy escorting Talib off the field after Talib's inevitable ejection. Marshawn Lynch, ladies and gentlemen. Marshawn Lynch is escorted to leave off the premises.
Beast mode keeping the peace.
Beast mode is out here keeping the peace.
Peace mode.
I was like, of all people to escort to leave off the field, Marshawn Lynch. Because, hey, no one's fighting Marshawn Lynch.
Nope.
No one. Nope. It's like Talib here started a fight. Okay, well, I can't have this. Like, off he goes. If you haven't seen it already, check it out on the Twitters. It's hilarious. More from Fight Club later this year on the Motorsport 101 podcast, inevitably, because there's bound to be more of these, and they never stop being funny. So, in the meantime, we're gonna play some music while I snatch Ryan King's chain. When we come back, we'll have the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Well, what was left of it anyway. King, we had the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix this weekend, and I think it's pretty safe to say that the F1 season did not end on a bang, but on a whimper.
It ended on a very awkward whimper.
That might have been the worst Grand Prix of the year. I am not even exaggerating or hyperboling when I say this. This race was awful.
Yeah, this is one, like, I can't wait for the SB Nation video about it in a couple of years' time. Worst Grand Prix.
It can't be anywhere near as good as the worst Thanksgiving game, eh, Ryan King?
Oh, no.
All I will say is, just Google that one on the SB Nation YouTube channel if you want to see Ryan King's beloved New York Jets take the almightiest of L's. But there was a Grand Prix. It did happen. Like I said, it might have been probably the worst Grand Prix of 2017, which, to be fair, we've had some stinkers. This one was probably at the top of the list. The most memorable thing about that Grand Prix, at least in my opinion, was Grosjean basically taking 115 different ways of trying to pass Lance Stroll.
And Bottas won, lol.
But, what do you mean, Bottas? Yeah. Bottas wins lol, Magnussen spins out of his own accord because Kevin Magnussen. And yeah, Grosjean basically got sick and tired of that Canadian boy shit. Fun times. That was about it, people. Oh yeah, and like I said, and Bottas won. Let's talk about Bottas winning, you know, because we've been a bit mean towards Val in recent weeks on this show. This was, I must say, a pretty flawless Val weekend. Like, he gets a surprise pole position.
Is it really? It's a second consecutive pole.
Exactly, it's a surprise. So, you know, like, yeah, like, I must admit, I was surprised with that. It was a stonking great pole lap, I have to say. Well done on that one, Val. That was a beautiful lap. Beating Lewis Hamilton by a couple of attempts on that one. Then, quote unquote, I feel sorry for the F1 intern that has to keep posting, "This is a new track record," because it was a new track record. Of course.
Yeah, they said new track record so many times. I'm pretty sure Tom Carnegie was like, "Do I come back from the dead yet?"
Yo, did we ever do a running tally of how many times that button that was pushed?
I don't know.
I actually did. It was 7 times, ladies and gentlemen, during that session that the track record was broken. So, yeah, I feel sorry for that intern. These cars, they get faster and faster, but the on-track action is still so bad. But hey, lap records, yo. Lap records, they're always cool, right?
Right, guys. Right. They're not going to get outdated and become dangerously unsafe.
No? No? Okay. Still, Val got a perfect getaway through turn one and pretty much led every single lap. Only the crossover in the pits, because you know what Mercs are like. Leading driver gets first call on stops. Lewis Hamilton tried to run long. Didn't work. Val came out ahead. Race was effectively over at that point in time because Ferrari were a million miles away. Ferrari were like, "Yeah, we're just here for third." Props to Val where props is due. That was flawless. You know, an excellent pole lap, brilliant start, got the win, fastest lap, led pretty much every single lap on the day. Can't say any more than that, King. Pretty flawless weekend.
Yep, solid. I wish we would have got that a whole lot sooner.
I know, right? It's like, if this had happened, in Belgium, as opposed to, now, we wouldn't have taken a crap on Val so hard towards the end of the year. But, hey, better late than never, right? Yeah. Better late than never. So,
late, and after King decided to disown hashtag Bottas in exchange for Carlos Sainz Jr., who had another mechanical DNF.
So the more things change, the more they stay the same. More on Carlos Sainz in a bit.
As I said on Twitter, this just shows how prolific Nico Rosberg was to win the world championship with me being one of his fans.
Yeah, it's like King normally drags everybody down around him, but Nico Rosberg overcame years of Ryan King support to win the world title last year. That in alone is a greater feat than beating Lewis Hamilton, quite frankly. But well done, Val. Brilliant drive. We have to give a little bit of credit, as if who doesn't do that these days, with Lewis Hamilton as well. Only the third world champion to ever win a world title while scoring points in every single race.
And you have to note that there's an asterisk besides that, because under some circumstances, he's the second guy to do that.
Is this because Fangio, who's one of the other two, scored points in the 500, which I think...
No. He didn't score points in the 500 when the 500 was a part of the championship.
And it didn't really... Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, I get you. So
it's really just down to, if you want to be pedantic, it's Lewis in 2017 and Schumacher in 2002.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and... two, quote, three, if you were born in 1935. You know, something like that. But yeah, congrats to Lewis Hamilton. I mean, let's not forget, for all the talk, this Mercedes team has been practically flawless all year long. I mean, they've not been as dominant in terms of sheer performance compared to other years, because, I mean, I think we had 7 non-Mercedes victories this year, and this was only Merck's 4th 1-2 of the year, as crazy as that sounds. But one DNF the whole year. That's very impressive indeed. Only Valtteri Bottas's engine in Spain was the only casualty.
Like, Renault's looking over is like, "Where do I get me some of that?"
Yeah, right. Exactly. But Lewis Hamilton, no points record this year. Yes. Yes, it's still safe for another year. 363, the final point total for Lewis Hamilton. Every race in the points. His worst result was 9th at Mexico, a 7th, and every other performance in the top 5 or better. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 times he finished either first or second. Not a single third place all year long. There's your fun fact of the day for you. No bronze medals in Lewis Hamilton's collection this year. There's your fun fact of the day for you. But also, I'm putting in the set list, but I've got to mention this king. Sebastian Beter Merckx! Get in there!
It took a while.
This is significant. This is the first time in the hybrid era a Mercedes has been beaten pound for pound over a calendar year. So, well done, Seb. Friggin' Lord's work there, my friend. 317 points in the end.
Seb, I expect a thank you letter in the mail. Like, that was like, half of that was me.
See him like kind of half on the wagon, but then he fell in love with Carlos Sainz's hairpiece. So it was like, cheers, King. We appreciate your service. The Sebastian Vettel fan club thanks you for your dedication and third party support. We're all here for it. God, it was a stinker of a race, though. The top five being so spread out. There was a nothing burger of a race. I mean, like, we saw Max Verstappen, you saw Verstappen try to have a crack at Kimi Raikkonen to no avail. And the only reason we had any sort of real intrigue in said top five was Daniel Ricciardo had another DNF. So
I think that was the only position change inside the top 10 all race long, at least for most of it.
Yeah, because like off the start, the top 12 was exactly the same. That never happens in F1, where like through the first lap, they put up obviously the up and downs on the grid, and it's like top 12, 0, 0, 0, 0. I was like, whoa, I've never seen that before in all my years of watching F1, where the top 12 was completely line astern through the opening lap.
This is literally a procession.
Yes, figuratively and literally. And again, it took Daniel Ricciardo's having a hydraulic failure to essentially derail him. Again, his sixth DNF of 2017, his third in the last four races, which was so bad, it actually resulted in Kimi Raikkonen leapfrogging him in the championship on the final round. So Raikkonen finishes fourth overall with 205 points compared to Ricciardo's 200.
Time to extend that deal. Time for another run-year deal.
The rolling one-year deal vote of no confidence. So for all those guys out here saying that Verstappen got the shit end of the stick, I present to you the end of Daniel Ricciardo's season. Three DNFs in the last four. That's brutal.
Yo, Red Bull cannot afford two working cars at the same time, it seems like.
Yeah.
No.
They're going to the Ayrton Senna at Lotus School of Thought. It's like, well, we can't have two top drivers. We can't afford that.
King, there was 20 races this year. 13 of them had at least one Red Bull DNF.
Oh my god.
66%, basically. Hey, so two-thirds of the...
Who provides their TAG Heuer engines?
Renault, apparently.
Yeah, and who's McLaren switching to next year?
I was like, are we sure this is a good idea, people? Are we absolutely sure on this?
I imagine that is a quote from Stoffel Van Dorn.
Yeah, Stoffel was down to 20th at one point.
Poor guy.
I mean, he made up for it later, but like didn't get any points out of this.
So 12th place for Stoffel, yeah. And again, like the 3-point scoring drives of Fernando Alonso to close the year put Alonso back ahead of Van Dorn in the Drivers' Championship as well. So Stoffel can't even hang his hat on that one anymore because Fernando closed the year with a 10th, an 8th, and a 9th in the last three rounds. Poor Stoffel. Give that man some credit. Again, it was a bit of a procession. And one of the guys that could have benefited from Ricciardo's unfortunate DNF was Carlos Sainz, who was making his way from further down the field. Until Renault screwed him by not putting his front left on properly. That old chestnut.
God. Oh, I almost forgot how he went out of the race.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, and now I remember now. The tire was coming off. They didn't even get a chance to put the wheel gun on there.
Nope. Like, Carlos took off, and that wheel was floppy by the time he got to the bottom end of the tunnel.
Yeah, he almost bended at Galail's Bend.
Galail's Bend. Galail's Bend.
There
is
just so much in the last 5 seconds. Like, number one, it got floppy before it reached the tunnel.
I didn't even realize I said that. That's genius. Oh my god.
See, I was thinking that, like, taking a look at the pit stop work and just seeing the air guns and commenting, that looks like my first time. I thought that was going to be the peak of our innuendos. Apparently, I've been outdone.
Yep. Wrong, Dre. Wrong. Oh, dear. Like, for all my sexual innuendos unintentionally of 2017, that might top the lot. Well done, me. I'm giving myself a pat on the back as we speak. Like, go me. But, a shame.
This is Abu Dhabi in an odd year. Abu Dhabi in an odd year is a crap show.
Really?
Abu Dhabi in even years? Yeah. Because if you look at all the even years we've had races at Abu Dhabi, 2010, title fight. 2012, Kimi wins and Vettel goes to the front, back to the front in an entertaining race.
Yes.
2014 title fight, 2016 title fight with Nico Rosberg wins. The other five runnings of this event.
Oh no.
So what I'm saying is you can look forward to an entertaining 2018 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.
So
or at least one with stakes involved.
So you're telling me that Abu Dhabi pretty much works on Simon Pegg's theory about Star Trek movies.
Yeah, so the even ones are all good and the odd ones are all terrible. Wow. So they're basically, Abu Dhabi is the San Francisco Giants of F1 races. I gotcha.
Abu Dhabi is like Star Trek. If Star Trek had Ferrari World. The highlight of the race was all the shots of Ferrari World. That was my visual highlight.
King! Lewis Hamilton, you've just won the Formula One World Championship. What are you going to do next?
I'm going to the Ferrari World.
As Toto Wolff and Niki Lauda nearly have a stroke.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm going to Ferrari... World.
That's kind of ironic.
I tell you, we need to build a Mercedes world right next door in Dubai. Going to be how we keep the drivers around?
Like, RJ, I had no idea you had such a good Niki Lauda impression.
It's at least a good Daniel Brühl as Niki Lauda impression.
That works. I consider that good enough, quite frankly. So when did Carlos Sainz join Renault again? What race was it? It was COTA, wasn't it?
Yes, it was COTA.
Yeah. COTA was the very first race.
Yeah, combined with him and Toro Rosso, he's had 4 DNFs in the last 6 as well. Ever since that 4th in Singapore, it's been a shithouse for Carlos Sainz. Mm. But he still did outscore Nico Hülkenberg in the Drivers' Championship. Mm. Which is crazy. Yeah. Carlos Sainz 9th overall in what was the sport's 7th best car.
Oh yeah, random note. I just remembered there is a Mercedes-Benz world.
Where is it?
Brooklyn's.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I forgot about that one. Good find, King. Good find. Speaking of Nico Hülkenberg, shout out to him. 6th place, the best of the rest honors go to Nico Hülkenberg again. And with that as well, not only does he overtake Felipe Massa to crack the top 10 on countback, on top of that, he also guided Renault to 6th in the Constructors' Championship in a fight that was literally worth some millions of dollars. About 6.5 million, apparently, when it comes to Constructors' finishing position. So well done, Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah, does it seem like ever since Sainz went to Renault that just really lit a fire right underneath Nico Hülkenberg's seat?
It did, because like Hülkenberg would have finished probably top 4 or 5 in Mexico if it wasn't for his engine failing. He was excellent at Singapore as well, but a little bit before Carlos Sainz, but that news was kind of already up in the air. So, like, again, Hulkenberg would have probably had fourth in Singapore if it wasn't for that, too. Now, I'm not exactly a rooter of Nico Hulkenberg, the person, but spoiler alert, he's probably going to get a really high score in the season reviews later this month. Because, yeah, if this was the year to prove that Hulkenberg can carry a team, he absolutely can. And he's pretty much dragged Renault into sixth place single-handedly. So, well done, Nico Hulkenberg, on a pretty great season, all things considered. More on that on next week's show, most likely. Also, shout out as well to Romain Grosjean, who was determined to put some entertainment in there when he tried to pass Lance Stroll 15 times over. That was fun. And then just having Lance Stroll completely sweep by him on the second straight. That Williams top-end speed is still so good. The same thing happened to poor Pascal Wehrlein. Had to dive bomb the crap out of Kevin Magnussen in the later periods. And then what happens? Second DRS zone, Magnussen completely swoops around the outside of him. And I remember the radio call from Pascal was, "Oh my god, he's so fast!" Pascal, if this was your final race, it's been a pleasure watching you, and you've done brilliantly with the opportunities you've been given, sir. Just wanted to get that one out there as well.
You're doing great, sweetie. You're doing great.
You really did. Again, more on that on the team reviews most likely next week. Also, a couple of more ironic things to point out. Alonso beating Felipe Massa to a narrow ninth place in Massa's final race. So, could you not have kicked Massa out in any worse fashion?
Yeah, please.
Of course Nando had to beat him one last time. Was that like a revenge for Brazil? It had to be, clearly. Oh, dear. Final championship standings, then, in case you're curious. Lewis Hamilton, your new four-time world champion, won 363 points. Sebastian Vettel, second. Dab, 317 points. Val cracks the 300 club, 305. Not bad from him at all. A strong finish, second first to close the year. Can't argue with that. Kimi Raikkonen, again, as we mentioned, narrowly beating Daniel Ricciardo for fourth. Ricciardo deserved that fourth place. He's been so good this year. Raikkonen on 205, Ricciardo 200. Verstappen couldn't ever really recover from that awful start of the year, 168. Sergio Perez in 7th, King. Cracks the 100-point club for the first time. 100 on the nose for Sergio Perez in 7th place. He wins the best of the rest paperweight. I'm borrowing it from the BSB Riders Cup for my old bike live jokes. He gets a paperweight. He gets to share it with Christian Inden. Well done, Sergio. You get the paperweight award. 100 points. Esteban Ocon, 8th place in his first full season overall. 87 points and finishing 19 out of 20 races. Superb season, Esteban. Well done, you, sir. As we mentioned him as well, Carlos Sainz. What a season he's had. 9th overall in the 7th best car in the field. 54 points all in, despite an awful end of the year until it came to reliability. The kid's a superstar. Seriously. I can't wait to see them and Renault together, him and Hulkenberg, properly next year. That's a formidable team. Hulkenberg, again, just mentioned, just cracks the top 10 with 43 points, beating Felipe Massa on the count of more 6th place finishes. Who would have thought it? Hulkenberg and Massa both on 43. Lance Stroll gets dumped out of the top 10 in his final race. Poor guy. On 40, but still a great season from Lance Stroll as a rookie.
He's the highest scoring rookie in the field. And again, what does that say, really, when, you know, Van Dorn really can't score points on a consistent clip? And neither could Pierre Gasly or Brendan Hartley.
Congratulations, RJ. Your man's wins the At Least You Tried award by winning Rookie of the Year basically by default. But hey, he was the only guy not in the top three teams to score a podium finish this year. So well done, Lance. Hey, he'll still always have Baku. 13 podiums this year from Hamilton, 13 from Vettel, 13 from Bottas, 9 from Ricciardo. Lance Stroll, the only man not in the top six to have a podium. Good for him. Romain Grosjean on 28 points in 13th. K-Mag, 19 points in 14th. Alonso, as we mentioned, narrowly beaten Van Dorn for 15th overall. Alonso, 15th overall. Sigh. 17 points to Van Dorn's 13. Jolyon Palmer, still hanging on to that Singapore finish in 17th place with 8 points. He only narrowly beat Pascal Wehrlein in 18th overall because Pascal with 5 points overall. Remember that 8th place in Catalonia? That's the one. Ties with Kvyat in 19th, the last two guys to score points. He had 5 points as well this year. Marcus Ericsson scores a donut. The only full-timer with the donut treatment, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, remember when it was like a struggle for some people to score points? Now it's like, hey, you're the only guy without points.
Yeah, but guess who's keeping his seat for next year, most likely?
Oh my god.
Yeah, Sauber's doing their Abu Dhabi Tower tire test tomorrow, and they confirm the lineup is Marcus Ericsson and Charles Leclerc. That sounds ominous.
Very.
Just saying. Also, are we all just forgotten about Antonio Giovinazzi already? Kick to the curb. Yesterday's news, son. Sorry about that.
Yep, sorry.
Leclerc jumped the queue.
No, if Lizzie's Twitter feed was any indication, I don't think we've forgotten about Antonio Giovinazzi.
No, no.
100 sweat drop emojis.
Oof. Yeah, as you do.
He's gorgeous.
He is. What a guy. Brendan Hartley, Pierre Gasly, Jenson Button, and Paul de Resta filling out the rest of the scoreboard. Constructors title, Mercedes win. You're all shocked. 668 points. And again, not quite the level of dominance we expected this year, but still a pretty convincing constructors title by 146.
I'm pretty sure this is the only thing we all agreed on at the start of the season, that no matter who won the Drivers' Championship, Mercedes would win the Constructors.
Well, it's not like you picked Sebastian Vettel to win the title or anything, did you? I'm off the narcotic for good, ladies and gentlemen. This is never happening again. And I don't care what anyone says, Ferrari was still really pretty good this year. Second place, 522 points scored. Still a pretty great effort all in, especially to get 5 wins as well. The best of the teams in the hybrid era to take on Mercedes. Red Bull, this is going to be a case of, I wonder what could have happened if they didn't have so many DNFs. 13 of them. Putting them kind of in no man's land on 368 points in third overall. Speaking of no man's land, Force India retain their fourth place title spot, 187 points, beating Williams by over 100.
Well done. The fourth, baby.
The season would have ended, Force India could have ran one car for the year and they still would have beaten Williams in fifth, because even Esteban Ocon had 87 points. Williams, as a team, had 83 this year. Williams, again, sort of in no man's land. Fifth place overall, 83 points. Renault, as we mentioned, won the cash battle for sixth place in the end, thanks to Hülkenberg's sixth place. 57 points, putting them just over Toro Rosso's 53, again, who had pretty much Carlos Sainz on their back for the entire year. And also four different drivers for him this year as well. 53 points for Toro Rosso in seventh. Haas end up back in 8th, unfortunately, despite a valiant effort and genuine improvement. 8th overall for the Americans. Sorry, King. 47 points for Haas there in 8th.
Hashtag not my team.
Not your Americans, hashtag. McLaren Honda in 9th on 30 points. They scored 30 points, but
yeah,
a bit.
Yeah, it's the second time in 3 years they've finished 9th.
One step forward, two steps back. I look forward to that team review segment on next week's show, that's for sure. 30 points on that one, and Sauber, bottom of the pile with just 5, unfortunately. But that is your 2017 final standings. And hey, Liberty Media were very quick to forget about this, because, King, we got a new logo!
Oh, God.
Oh, buddy.
Oh boy, we've gone for this show for nearly an hour and we've not mentioned their new logo yet.
Part of me hoped that it would change before we got to this segment. That breaking news,
they unveiled their new logo almost immediately after the Grand Prix.
Can we talk about the reveal trailer?
The reveal trailer.
Yo. We're kicking that old intro to the curb.
We're kicking the old intro to the curb in the style of an MLG montage parody.
Yeah, it's montage and parody. They're like, whoa, MLG montage? Whoa, those are better than that parody. Okay.
I'm here for it. And you know what? I don't care. I like the logo.
You are
Shoot
in,
me.
You are in a minority, my friend.
Listen, I backed Sebastian Vettel to win the world title this year. I already knew I was in a minority. I might as well go all the way with
Italy
this.
Italy is not a minority.
In the context of this F1 sport right now, it is. I know, I openly admit, I'm in the minority here. I like the logo. It reminds me of Wipeout, and therefore it is awesome.
What's that comparison got made to me? I was just like, you know what? Actually, yeah, this logo has gone from fine to being pretty okay. The basic identity itself is all right. It's simple. There's not that ambiguity about the negative space, although negative space in a logo design is pretty clever, I guess. I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, it's simple. And the typeface is just... that typeface is dated.
Yeah. It looks like something you would see on, like, a Weyland Yutani spacecraft in Alien.
You know what it is, King? It's basically like they've copied the ESPN logo, which is like, kind of a conspiracy because Sean Bratch has worked for ESPN for 27 years.
Like, honestly, I think I tweeted out somebody made a slight change to the logo where they gave the one a serif, so it actually looks like a one. And I was like, that is 100% better than what they released on Sunday.
I openly admit that it is better, but I like that, with the little pointy one, that is way better. It is, you know, I like it. I like that one a little bit more. I like it more than the one that the guy that does that fucking mini series had yesterday. Fuck that guy, by the way.
No punches pulled.
I don't think I haven't forgotten his racist bullshit last year, by the way. Like, you know, like I'm just going to drop an N-bomb here to describe Dark Mini's character, yeah? Yeah. F that guy. But, RJ, what's your take on the logo?
It's fine.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I know, like, King is going to disagree with me on this. I like the basic identity of the logo. I think as I mentioned, the text isn't all that great, but you know as Sean Kelly put it after the race, you know, if this logo comes to be associated with better racing, better fan access, more competition, everybody will enjoy it in time.
It's one of those things that I think people are just going to get mad about for a week and then just get used to it like everything else and just not worry about it anymore.
But I mean, like, looking back in time, the logo before the previous one, I also did not enjoy that, though people, like, have a fond nostalgia for it.
This is F1, King. Everybody loves nostalgia.
Everyone loves nostalgia, my dude.
Yeah, so... Is it just me, or is it just more the fact that F1 fans just don't like change?
No. I think, this logo has, like, genuine design flaws.
In what sense?
Like, number one. The reason why I like the serif design, not only can you tell it's a one, the F looks like an F and not a lowercase r.
True that.
Like, it's hard to... It's hard to describe at a distance what are you looking at, whether you're seeing an R and an I or an F and a 1. Like, that is a problem.
It is a problem.
If you back away from it, it almost looks like an A.
Oh my god, that is even worse. That is even worse.
Like, y'all thought people who thought the Walt Disney logo read out Disney. Like,
we're at a whole other level. Like, it's a legibility problem. Like, I don't want to say identity, because, like, it looks like something for, like, racing related, but, like, legibility is an issue.
I love how people compared it to, like, the logo that people would use to introduce their F1 21X YouTube series. Which is very funny, because considering Brendan Hartley has been pretty much doing a short Last to First Challenge series this whole season.
Pretty much. It was so good, Lewis Hamilton thought he had to go in Brazil. But, yeah, that's the logo. I'm sure you expected a lot more of a case of hotter takes here, but two of us are just okay with it, and one of us is like, well, that's a little bit bad, but meh.
Yeah, like one slight change would make it miles better.
Yeah, it's like, sorry about that.
We had time to sleep on it.
It's amazing how that works, you know? You don't just come out of a bunch of blazing hot takes regarding... Like, who does that on this podcast, anyway?
Though, I love the design company behind it. It's like, this is our greatest achievement, guys. We're so proud.
Guys, that could have taken 10 minutes to draw up, and they're like, they probably got... Like, I saw, like, a good friend of the show, and I know he listens to us a lot, and I don't mention him on here, but... Guys, remember Val Dudes? Big fan of us, apparently. The streamer Val Dudes, he's a good friend of mine from the F1 days. He said it's probably kind of bad that like some guys probably got paid like $250,000 to design that.
Yeah,
take the money though.
Run.
Take the money and run. Just run.
Run. Just run.
Put it in the savings account. Buy your Cyber Monday items. We are recording this on a Cyber Monday, November 27th.
Hey, because they gave him a whole bunch of ideas. And a bunch of people at F1 who have Twitter accounts, which I will not mention, said, okay, we're going to run with that. The design company didn't say we're going to run with that. F1 said we're going to run with that.
No, we're taking this, and that's final, basically.
Yeah.
With Sodjaw design, we're going with this pre-rendered build. Yeah, like sorry about that. Our takes are being quite tepid on this one. Our bad. All I will say is I don't like all these people that are saying, oh, look at all these sports problems and they're fixing the logo. As if, like, major problems in the sports competitive balance and, like, overtaking and other shit could just magically be fixed overnight.
Y'all. We race in Bahrain. Like, you have no footing to stand on saying, oh, what about all the other issues? Well, we purposely give ourselves issues.
Yeah, we race in Bahrain, a country that only gave women the right to vote 14 years ago. Just saying. Like, I don't see you making noise about that. But, you know, the logo. Shit on it from a great height. But, guys, they're working on the other stuff. Give it some time. Yeah. You know, give it some time, some patience. Like, okay, wasn't this like some of these the same fans that actually quite liked the proposed ending changes last week? I'm just saying. Like... Also, one more thing I want to bring out from this past weekend. Who here watched the F1 esports series?
Oh gosh, I did not.
Yeah, I was at work.
You guys are terrible fans. It has to come down to me to watch it. The guy that has the biggest beef with one of its main experts on said panel. Thanks a bunch, you guys. Under the bus.
I love the highlights though. The highlights were awesome, and the GIF reactions.
The highlights are great. The GIF's reactions were great.
It feels like it'd be right up in my alley. You have race cars, you have video games, you don't have things that would make real life racing boring.
Yeah.
Davide Valsecchi in the booth.
Yeah, like, here's my take on the whole thing. I did watch the Grand Final, I watched the semis as well. There's a lot of potential in this. The potential is through the roof with this format. Like, we had three races over the weekend for the Grand Finals. They had one on the Friday, which for some reason wasn't streamed, which I think was dumb. Quite frankly, they didn't stream the first race. Because, like, I'm not saying this was flawless, and I'll get to a big reason why that was in a second. But, yeah, the Friday race wasn't streamed, but we got races 2 and 3 streamed live on Twitch and F1 Facebook Live page. Twitch, they were batting about 8,000 viewers, which is pretty good. Pretty good. Decent amount.
It's not Alonzo at Indy numbers, but it's decent.
We're getting there. The room wasn't built in the day, and all that. But shout out.
It really was.
God damn it. But shout out to Brandon Lee, who wins the F1 Esports Series Grand Final with a spectacular win. I think he won race 1 and race 3, the final round in Abu Dhabi, and I don't know if you saw the highlights, but that last lap pass for the win, spectacular. Basically, they're going down the front straight. The whole thing's on YouTube. They put the whole third race on YouTube if you can, so you can watch it if you want. So, minor spoiler if you haven't already. But the final lap, there's a guy in the Mercs in the lead. Brandon is in second place. He's got DRS. He's got one crack at the win here, basically. He fakes to the right, but then darts down to the left in the braking zone on the first DRS area. Dive bombs, takes the lead, makes it stick. The other guy has to cut the corner and gets a 3-second time penalty. And Brandon immediately wags his finger on the hard camera after making the pass. What a gangster! Oh. And as he crosses the line, knowing he's won the eSports series, he does the finger wag again! Brandon, I know you don't listen to us, but if you do, you, sir, are a gangster. Awesome. Going full Jorge Lorenzo. Doesn't even care for the fact he's won. He's more mad about the guy that ran him off the road. Brilliant. So, Brandon is a gangster. Shout out to Sembo Lasky, who won race 2 at Spa as well. And now part of Fernando Alonso's esports team, which is really cool. So, Fernando Alonso's doing all his, next chapter of his F1 career stuff already. So that's really cool. So, shout out to that.
Yes, and shout-outs as well to Fernando Alonso for launching a team named after one of the greatest squads in Ridge Racer history, FA Racing.
Of course, great stuff.
Greatness acknowledging greatness.
Yep. Shout-out as well to, I know there's a good few friends of ours that were working on that a lot over the course of this year, like Lee Marver at Codemasters, Jenny as well, and a lot of guys put a lot of time into making this work, and I think for the most part they pulled it off. So well done to those guys. Congratulations to Cody's and obviously F1 coming together for this. They did a really great job, apart from a couple of guys disconnecting during races through no fault of their own and not restarting. That was a problem. This was mentioned a lot on the Friday in particular, where a couple of guys were knocked out of lobbies due to the game servers. That's not acceptable. And the fact the race wasn't restarted when two guys dropped out, probably not a good look. Still a bit of work to do for given esports and the F1 platform. I mean, you've got an esports series now. There really isn't an excuse for you to have a better functioning multiplayer. Otherwise, the whole thing's going to come tits up, basically. But production-wise, besides that, excellent. Well done to Fizzy and the guys in the booth as well. Fizzy, you may know him from his AOR days. He was in charge of the camera work as well and did a lot of great work with the crew. So shout out to those guys as well. The disconnections were a problem, and that's pretty much my only black mark on an otherwise really fun series. And I'm with friend of the show, Fake Ghost Pirate, Justin Sitton, you may know him on Twitter as well, who said, listen, make it a whole season thing. Fly him out, make it an esports series, replicate the actual calendar, and, put a stick an enormous cash prize at the end. I think that's the next step for me, at least as a series. Run it side by side by the calendar, because they did a really good job of highlighting these esports users and making them seem like they were big deals, and that is something that I genuinely admired about the F1 social media accounts, that they made the F1 esports guys look like they were actual drivers. Yes. And that is really cool. They actually put them on the F1 podium for the ceremony itself at the end on the Sunday morning. Again, really cool feature. Mika Häkkinen was giving them, I think was handing over the trophies as well.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, really cool stuff. Gordon Ramsay was down there, Mark Cavendish was down there. So, they treated it like it was a big deal, and I'm really glad they did. And that's the first step. If you make a series like this and you take esports seriously, the people will come. And overall, for me, great job from everybody involved. Could still work on a couple of things, but the potential, I think, is huge. So, well done. Great show. Hopefully, more soon. Hopefully, again, next year, please. I mean, 65,000 people signed up, which is a great sign. So, the potential is there.
I'd say not make it a whole year thing, but have, an official preseason during the F1 summer break when, you know, F1 fans are dying for something to follow, and then then have it every round, you know, every F1 round after the summer break. And usually, like, the preseason hashtag, like, actual summer break would be when, you know, that year's version of the Codemasters game would come out anyway.
Yeah, it's a very good point. It is a very good point. Absolutely. They'll ship them all off to Codemasters to get early access anyway, most likely, like they do every year with the bloody YouTubers. But
just one last thing here. Thank you to everybody who has put together NBC Sports Formula One coverage over the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
This, of course, their last race covering Formula One in the United States before the rights get turned over to ESPN. I know Dre is going to roll his eyes and groan when I tell him that Lee Diffy, David Hobbs, and Steve Matchett celebrated the occasion with a toast. A toast of Shoeys.
No! 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 The Shoey is still awful! No! What?
It's fine.
It was their last race. I'll let it slide.
We'll let it slide this time. Diffy at least took off one of his own shoes, so he wasn't, you know, just drinking out of a clean shoe.
Like a pansy.
Yes. Matchett and Hobbs drunk out of clean shoes. Like, it wasn't the shoes.
Cowards!
Really, Dre?
Cowards! If you're gonna do this, at least drink out of your own shoe if you're gonna replicate the shoey, for God's sake. It's not authentic otherwise.
Yeah.
Drink your toe jam, dammit!
Yeah, I think Ricardo's calling.
Danny Ricardo's had is taking issue with this, so he's now calling King up directly. too busy calling the president a C-word. Good man.
David Hobbs' last race after 41 years of doing broadcasting. Yep. Lee Diffy's probably going to stick around with NBC to call some Olympics. As for everybody else, who knows what's going to happen? What's going to happen to Billy Butts? What's going to happen to Tony and Lou? The possibilities are endless. But they're good people, and you know, thank you so much for putting on some great racing over the past 5 years. You actually help bring people into the sport.
I've only ever seen clips of NBC, because obviously being the only British guy here, you know, naturally going to be a struggle through things like geolocks and whatnot, but their editorial work in particular, Tony and Luke, has done tremendous work over the last couple of years, and Luke's been a guy I've admired a lot since meeting him last year. It was actually January this year I met him in person, and that great big Sarah Connors Motorsport meetup in East London in a really, really old pub deep under the ground. It was great. But Luke and Tony's done tremendous work. Everyone at NBC, like Buxton, me and him have conflicts on a lot of stuff, but he's done tremendous work for them over the years.
Jason
as well.
Jason Swales as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who worked pretty much the entire season in crutches.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. So a salute to everyone at NBC for the hard work, and I hope all of you involved fall up from this, whatever it may be, because we know the journalism game is hard out there these days. I mean, God, we're on this goddamn podcast. It kind of says it all, really. But, I hope you guys all fall up in whatever you guys end up doing. We wish you all the very best indeed. So shout out to NBC and everybody involved for the great work. And, yeah, that does it. Guys, we're at the end. This is the end of us basically reviewing races and stuff. God, that 2017 season went quite quick, actually, didn't it? Apart from maybe the last 5 rounds or so. I guess we'll talk about it a little bit more in length next week when we go through the teams again. That's always fun. And the awards, because, hey, that'll be fun. And hey,
Motorsport 101, the award show.
Yes! The third year of the Motorsport 101 Awards. And we have a special guest for that as well, which I'll get to at the end of the show. Stay tuned on that. So, with a little bit of a musical interlude here, we'll get into a little bit of news. You got a great car. Yeah, what's wrong with it today? This is like the caviar version of the news this week. It's the little taking little bite sized pieces of news this week on this more streamlined edition of the show.
Yeah, not a lot's happening here, honestly.
Yeah, kind of a problem, really. But guys, get hype! Formula E's back this weekend.
Yeah, Fandom's season four. Back. Yes, season four. Season four is usually a good season for every great sitcom. Yeah. Formula One might not be any different.
But Formula E back, season opener in Hong Kong, live in the UK on Eurosport. It'll do.
It'll do.
I'll take it. But, guys, look at the fan boost. Lucas Degrassi is on top again.
Whoa, it's only Monday. Monday.
World champion Lucas Degrassi. I know it's technically not a world championship. It's a world championship.
it is, but it isn't.
RJ's being that guy.
Way that IndyCar is a quote unquote world championship.
I mean, would you dispute it though? Would any one of us dispute it?
Yes, I would.
Yes, he would, RJ.
Yeah, I would.
In semantics only, but in terms of quality of competition...
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, no, hang on. We've got an update from Zoe in the chat. Apparently Daniel Abt is now in the lead with 29% of the votes.
Oh, and Eduardo Mortara, potential Rookie of the Year contender, Eduardo Mortara is second ahead of Felix Rosenquist. Lucas Diamond Felipe is fifth.
This is not right. I demand driver for hire be up higher up the list.
Nah, get the bots in here, y'all. Get the bots in here, y'all.
Yeah, like we're gonna see Sebastian Buemi shoot up the list of about two hours before the race actually goes off.
Put the bots into Kamui Kobayashi. This is his
yes!
race. He's gonna be spelling for what's it? MSAD, Andretti, BMW. Whatever they are now.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that it's like we're kind of walking into a little bit of the unknown here. I mean, I think they're up in the race voltage. Well, I think those things are going to be 180 kilowatts for races now, you guys, I think, for season four.
More power,
which is going to be fun. But this is going to be kind of like the blind leading the blind. But are we still in for Sebastian Buemi for the title?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, clean sweep here. We're all in on Buemi. Sorry, Lucas. Too many hipster motorsport robotic takes for our liking.
Hashtag I like DevBot better than you.
Somebody has to. Like. On a side note, real quick, did you guys see the beef between David Coulthard and Lucas Degrassi on that one?
Oh my God! Oh, yeah, God. Lucas Degrassi had actually a fairly rational point that maybe to avoid like massive pileups of the one we saw at Macau, that maybe cars should have accelerometers and other smart technology. And David Coulthard fired back with something to the effect of like, yeah, and I wish race cars had idiot-proof sensors on them so that I could be a world champion.
Yeah, Lucas Degrassi tweeted, after what happened in the GT race in Macau, it is time to develop an automated driver warning system based on GPS and accelerometer of all the cars in the race. This could prevent or diminish the severity of such accidents. David Coulthard was like, let's also develop an idiot gauge, an early warning bad investment system, and get virtual life forms to live our perfect life. That way I could have been a champion. Quote from famous non-time world champion no, David Coulthard.
Oh my God, DC, yeah. Why?
Yeah, and in fairness, you know, after Macau, it's like, yeah, we kind of realized that, hey, maybe this place with a permanent yellow flag zone isn't the best place for rapidly increasing in speed GT3 cars to be driven at anger.
Yeah, they're like basically Group C prototypes now.
Yeah, we talked about this last year when Marlboro had that awful accident at the Nürburgring. So, we've kind of been here before. Maybe not the best fit. But hey, I'm sure Lucas will play title spoiler again like he always does. And that's part of the fun of Formula E. And inevitable Twitter shitposting. Check back next week for more of that as we get a better idea on how the grid's going to shake out. But yeah, Formula E, always a good laugh. Should be a fun times indeed for season 4. Now, I want to say a big shout out to Matt Lindo, who tweeted me this morning, and it's actually kind of intriguing. I said, this would be a great topic for your show, and I was like, yeah, quite right, actually. This does seem quite intriguing. It is a current list of the updated super licenses, and like basically who would be eligible for an FIA super license as of right now. The list here says driver points accumulated from the start of the 2014-15 Formula E season to the end of 2017 does not include former Formula One drivers, for obvious reasons. So there's some interesting names on this. I'll read you out the full list here. At the top of the list, which nobody was able to guess, which I thought was quite funny, when I mentioned this in the pre-show.
Is he German?
Yes, he is.
Really? What does he drive?
NMP1.
Okay. Is it Andre? No. He's technically a former Formula One driver.
Is it nope. Rockenfeller?
No.
No.
Is it Arnd Mayer?
No. Getting warmer. Slowly. Very slowly.
Then I give up. Answer was right in front of me all along. It's Timo Bernhard.
Timo Bernhard was 76 super license points racked up in the last 3 years. Well, I was like, oh, okay, that one makes sense. Timo Bernhard on the top of the list, obviously two-time WEC world champion, of course. WEC is eligible. I think the title gets 40 points for that one, I think, something like that. So,
yeah.
Timo Bernhard on top of the pile. Charles Leclerc, of course, the new Formula 2 champion. 75 points, of course, carrying that GP3 title as well. 75 for Charles Leclerc. Last year's IndyCar champion, Simon Pagenaud, with 70 points.
At the top of the IndyCar pile.
Yes, sir. Mr. Consistency. Simon, he likes crepes, Pagenaud, in 70. Scott Dixon, the 2015 IndyCar champion, in there with 66 points. As is Neil Yarny. From the WEC as well, also with 66. My finger-wagging friend and yours, Oliver Rowland, who was annoyingly disqualified from Abu Dhabi's feature race in Formula 2.
Oh, man.
Robbed of a race win for an illegally low skid block. For God's sake.
Didn't even mention it on the Formula 2 re-air before the race on NBC. Didn't even mention it.
Yeah, Roland disqualified to start the sprint race from the back because of an illegally low skid block. He got the James Hinchcliffe treatment, everybody. Same thing happened to Charles Leclerc earlier this year in Spa. So, same punishment, which bumped up Artem Markelov to the win. Again! Second time this year, Markelov's been the direct benefactor of someone faster than him being disqualified. Of course. Oliver Rowland there with 63 points. He's now eligible. Lando Norris, the European Formula 3 champion, with 62 points. Our boy, driver for hire, Felix Rosenquist, with 60 points. He's got the longest series link of everyone out there, by the way. Formula E, Super Formula, and Carrera Cup Sweden.
And that's just a sampler.
Yeah, that's just the sampler.
That's our Felix. Driver for hire indeed. Living up to his name there. Sergei Sorokin has 60 points. Obviously Formula 2 and LMP2 in the WEC as well. Sam Bird. The bird is indeed the word. He has 58. The Formula E and, of course, WEC LMGTE. Will Power has 58 points. A couple of IndyCar runner-up series berths kind of help you out on that one. Ollie Jarvis with 56 points in LMP2. Luca Giotto, 54 points from Formula 2. Joseph Newgarden, the brand new IndyCar Series champion, has 54 points. He's now eligible. Also, shout out to Matt, who also tweeted me, also saying that, small mistake in my table, add Romain Dumas and Marc Liebe, who both have 50 points each. So, yeah, shout out to those two guys as well. Maximilian Günther, European Formula 3, 48 points. Nicolas Prost, insert your own jokes here, Formula E, 44 points. Joel Eriksson, 43 points in European Formula 3. Conweezy, Mike Conway, has 42 points from LMP1 and WeatherTech Sports Cars. As has Loic Duval, he has 42 points as well. Jose Maria Lopez from LMP1 and Formula E, 42. Artem Markelov, my boy, Markelov, everyone's favourite dressed Formula 2 driver with 42 points, and Earl Bamber rounds off the list with 40. So, some fun names here, King.
Yep.
I look forward to precisely none of them being in Formula 1 next year.
Too many drivers, not enough seats.
The story of Formula 1 since, God, 2009, maybe? But there's some really fun names on that list there. So, again, big thanks to Matt for tweeting us that, by the way. Much appreciated, sir. Thanks very much for that. But, yeah, some very fun names on that list from all sorts of life in the motorsport series as well. Some fun stuff there, indeed. And a little bit of IndyCar stuff to get through as well before we wrap up this week's show, King. Guess what? IndyCar still wants a third engine supplier.
Yep, more the merrier. Please, anyone.
Are they still knocking on BMW's door regarding this?
Well, they never really knocked on BMW's door to begin with, but apparently Jay Fry, competition president of IndyCar, has ventured off to Europe to see if he could, you know, get some manufacturers interested in supplying IndyCar with engines.
I like it.
Hmm.
Get someone with a bit of IndyCar history, like maybe, you know, Alfa Romeo has come up a couple times. You know, Porsche has some history in the sport.
Yeah, just, you know, try to, like, quote, it's great to see, and you could tell we're meeting with the groups that we're following and what we're doing on the Aero side with Universal Aero Kit, and that has stoked their interest in what they can do on the engine side. Because that's the thing, before the Universal Aero Kit, pretty much you had to also not only develop an engine, but develop an aero kit for the Dallara. Now that they only have to develop an engine, a lot more people are interested now.
Oh, I see. That makes a lot of sense, actually. So yeah, why not venture out into Europe and see if anyone wants to buddy up with a wagon? Like, a third manufacturer would be really cool, though. Like, I'm a little bit bored of Chevy basically kicking, like, Honda to the curb outside of the 500 and the other super speedways, but that would be pretty cool. You know, just a thought. That would be pretty neat. Like, King, any ideas?
I think I'm with RJ. I really feel that it's probably going to be Alfa Romeo.
Alfa?
Yeah, a lot of people would like Ford, but it's looking like it's Alfa who are really activating their brand in the United States.
And for good neat. Reason,
cars are gorgeous.
Yeah, their own cars are stunning, basically pornographic. As a guy that has driven the Alfa 4C on Gran Turismo Sport more than any other car in the game, yeah.
That's not even the car I want the most. Like, 4C, it's a good kid's car. Man, I really want that. I want the Giulia. I got my six-figure executive job, and I have just become just a trudging trove of far-right conservative, like, bullshit as I'm just soaking in money and don't want to just, like, pay any of my damn taxes.
Yeah, like, when I see an Alfa Giulia, I see it tumbling down an Italian like quarry while James Bond with like his one door Aston Martin drives off into the distance.
That was like one of my favorite segments out of the Grand Tour this past season. That Giulia is a beautiful thing. That looks like the car that a mafia boss would own.
No, that a mafia boss underling would have as a company car.
Yeah, that's the one for the boys in the back with the shotguns. Basically,
you don't want to buy it right after the Lufthansa heist, though, because that'll tip off the cops, and then Jimmy Burke is going to want to have you executed.
Yeah,
and who said we're not cultured on motorsports?
Right. It reminds me a lot of that Top Gear segment back in the news when they first unveiled the Brera, and that was like, oh, they basically treated the Brera like it was a sex line. It was like, tell me about your Brera. Is it black with tan leather? Oh. It was basically pornography. It was a beautiful thing. Alfa Romeo makes some stunning cars. Good lord. yeah, that just about does it for this week's episode of Motorsport Won't It. It's a kind of a shorter one this week because this wasn't that much to talk about, really, to be honest with you. Oh, wait a minute.
We also
King at the last minute.
IndyCar, other IndyCar news. Where?
Oh yes, I forgot to mention Mexico City, didn't we? Yeah, my bad.
Where it seems like IndyCar is hoping for a miracle to pull this deal together, to have a race in Mexico City to replace the WEC round that won't be happening next year because of hashtag Super Season. And
hashtag Super Season, yeah.
And the promoters are worried because IndyCar isn't as popular as it used to be in Mexico, and they were kind of hoping to have, you know, a Mexican in the field to be a draw.
That's kind of a problem because, well, there's only really one Mexican eligible for this now, really, and that's most likely Esteban Gutierrez, and he's not exactly what you call confirmed for next year now, is he?
No. There's like two open seats left, and one of them is part-time and road courses only.
Yeah. So Dale Coyne, want to save the Mexico City race by giving Esteban the seat next year? He was okay in IndyCar, I guess, in his brief time there with them.
Look at it this way. You will get lots of consistency. Just tons and tons of 11th place finishes.
Let's... Can't argue with that. I mean, though, it can't be any worse than my goof up in the pre-show where I accidentally thought Carlos Munoz was Mexican for a second there.
Someone who we've had on the show.
Shut up.
Distinguished Motorsport 101 guest and North American Endurance Cup ringer of the stars, Carlos Munoz.
My bad, yo. My bad. I thought it was Mexican. Of course he's Colombian. I'm an idiot. I hold my hands up to this one. This one is probably going to be saved for the Motorsport 101 blooper reel next year. God damn it.
Y'all, I just thought of something. We could probably bring back the Tecate livery.
Wearing it, I was going to say bring back Carlos.
And we get the best thing out of it. Sylvester Stallone and Canelo Alvarez as co-investors.
Yes!
Coin Racing.
Yes! Yes!
Esteban, be bold!
Yes! 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 I'm here for it. Be bold. Bring back Esteban. Okay, anything else you want to interject with before I wrap this up?
No, we're done here. We're done here.
We're good. We're good here. We can get out of it.
I think the concept of Sylvester Stallone as an IndyCar team owner just brought back horrible flashbacks of Driven.
Yeah, that's where my mind went immediately.
I was trying to forget about that, RJ. For God's sake. You left the listeners with a leaving image of Driven. Like we've just lost like half our listenership for next week now. Thanks a bunch, RJ. This is all your fault.
We are experimenting with a boutique audience for the winter months.
He's gone full hipster, everybody. We're going to talk about the fine cultural merit of the film Driven in our inevitable movie club which didn't happen last year. We've got to try that again this year, clearly. But, yeah, that will just about do it for this week's show. Tune in next week for the season review of Formula One and the Motorsport 101 Award Show. Woo! And we have a special guest lined up for next week. Coming to you all the way from the confines of Bike Live, Lewis Sotheby will be joining the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh!
Yep, yes. He's ready for the impending Lewis Sotheby double turn.
Yes!
He's ready to get betrayed, you're ready to get betrayed.
I'm ready for him to nominate Jonathan Ray for every category. So, if you guys want any fancy award categories on the show, or any fancy nominations, why don't you tweet us at Motorsport101, or you can tweet me at Harrison101HD.
Is Jonathan Ray eligible for a Heisman vote?
Oh my god.
I'm doing the pose right now as we speak. It's great. He's won everything else this year. He might as well, right? All in for Johnny Ray for sports personality. Let's go. That'll just about do it for this week's show. Thanks as always for listening. Basically, you can catch us one more time. We're on YouTube.com and Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter @Motorsport_101. And our personal Twitter is @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, and @RJOConnell. If you really, really like us, of course, you can back us on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. And of course, all those details can be found on our website at motorsport101.net. Don't forget, $5 early access gets you early access to both this show and Bike Live and our big MotoGP season review this weekend. It's going to be great. So, until next week, I've been Andre Harrison, they've been Ryan King and RJ O'Connell, and until next time, thanks for listening, and sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye!
Like, I'm not-